Okay, let's begin. Of course, Shabbos is Shabbos HaGadol. That is the traditional time for Rabbanim to deliver their Shabbos HaGadol drushas. That is now impossible. And so I discovered many other Rabbanim are delivering a Shabbos HaGadol drusha tonight or tomorrow. So this drusha is different. Like Pesach is different, Manishtana, this drush is different from my usual drushes, which, as those of you who've come to the shul know, are tend to be very structured and kind of architectured and kind of involve an attempt on my part to deeply understand a particular sugya, topic, halacha, or what have you. My drusha today is really occasioned by what we're all going through, and it's more in the way of meditations about Pesach and the Haggadah, as I try to grapple myself with the circumstances we find ourselves in and think about that in the context of Pesach. So Haggadah really begins with Manishtana Halayla Hazeh, and that is a penetrating question for us for the Seder night. How is this Seder night different from all other Seder nights of the year? Not all other nights of the year, which is what the Haggadah says. But we ask ourselves, Manishtana Seder Zeh Mikol HaSdarim, all of the other starim that we have experienced as in our own lives, and all the starim that we Jews have experienced over the years. And clearly, the epidemic that surrounds us renders this Pesach dramatically different. Many of us will be conducting the Seder either by ourselves or with a spouse or some close family member, but basically we're on our own in ways that we have never been before. I know that Chai and I have never in our entire married experience ever spent Seder just the two of us. So we've been with family, and that's a dramatic change. And we celebrate the Seder so differently, surrounded by circumstances that are so different from the usual circumstances which lead up to Pesach. Of course, we're always busy and buying and preparing and cleaning. Well, we're not going out to do too much buying now. If we're fortunate, we get some deliveries or somebody purchases for us if we can't get the deliveries. We're not buying pots and pans unless we really need it. We're very much isolated and hibernating in our own Dalet Amos, you know, our own limited framework. And that's a very, very, very different experience. I'd like to reflect about that in a number of ways. And I'll begin by sharing with you an insight of the Radziner, the Sod Yesharim, on Moror. Because if there is any symbol in the Seder night that speaks to us today, that's the symbol of Moror. The bitterness that surrounds us, and there is so much difficulty. I hope to, over the course of my talk tonight, frame that a little bit and try to make it easier for us. But first, we need to confront the reality that Vayamaru es Chayehem, we are living in very difficult, bitter times. And the Radziner says something that's important, I think, and something for us to think about. He says, think about Bnei Yisrael and Mitzrayim. We were enslaved. We had sunk to the Memtesh Shari Tuma. We were in a very bad place religiously. And yet, nevertheless, despite the moror of our lives, nevertheless, Loshinu Ashmam, Malbusham, Lashonam, we retained a certain loyalty to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And Moshe Rabbeinu came and he announced the Geula. The Israel listened to him. Eventually, V'aminu Bashem. And so, despite the extraordinarily adverse circumstances of centuries of slavery, despite the merirus of that slavery, Bnei Yisrael were able to maintain a kesher with Hashem, a relationship with Hashem. And the ability to maintain that relationship despite merirus, despite bitterness and difficulty, speaks to the strength of that relationship. And when eventually Yetzias Mitzrayim took place and Kriyas Yamsuf, we were able to build on a deep-rooted, ineradicable connection to Hashem. And the Merirus, in some sense, empowered and strengthened that relationship as limited as it was, because we had sunk to the Memtesh Shari Tuma. But we survived, and we maintained that relationship despite the Mariris. And the Mariris highlights, and here's the key point I want to make, he makes, the Reziner. The Mariris highlights the depth and the power, even when it's limited, of that relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the depth and power and tenacity of that relationship enable Kanal Yisrael to endure those years of Mariris, and beyond that, to grow and expand and achieve Kabbalah, Satorah, and Eretz Yisrael and the building of the Beis HaMikdash. I'd like to tell you a little story about my mother-in-law, Aleh HaShalom, Chaya's mother. Her first yard site was yesterday. Family got together and via Zoom, like we now are, video conferencing, and we shared some memories of her. And this story didn't come up, but it really struck me, and it seems so relevant to our circumstance. This is a story we heard from her. My mother-in-law was a survivor of the Holocaust. She was in Auschwitz for years. And she didn't really, for most of her life, didn't like to talk about that experience, but later in her years, she did. And at one point, she shared this story. At the very, very end of the Jewish suffering and murder and tragedy of Auschwitz, as you know, that happened around, liberation happened just after Pesach, around Pesach time. And during Pesach, whoever was in the camps got the meager provisions that one could barely and really not survive on. A little bit of bread, a little soup. And it was definitely mutter to eat chametz on Pesach. It's a matter of life and death. If somebody had a provision on Pesach and they didn't eat it, they'd risk their life. Because they had nothing to eat. That's all they had to eat. So from a halachic perspective, there's no question that people could eat chametz on Pesach. And many did. Many wonderful Jews did that. My mother-in-law had this powerful connection to Hashem and Amuna, and she didn't eat her provisions throughout the 8 days of Pesach. And she knew she would get into trouble with the authorities, the Nazis, if she didn't, if they saw it around. She couldn't like hide it somewhere. So you know what she did? She hid it in her hair. Every little morsel of bread, she somehow tied up her hair, was covered with a kerchief. Underneath that kerchief, in her hair, she managed to hide the little pieces of bread that the Nazis gave her. It's an amazing expression of emunah in Hashem and yirat shamayim, a loyalty to her parents. She was very close to her father. She knew that's what he wanted, even though it really wasn't halachically necessary. So liberation came shortly after Pesach. And before the, well, actually it wasn't liberation. The Nazis heard that the Russians were approaching and they all fled. When they fled, there was no food because the Nazis were the one who provided the food. And many people perished after the Nazis had fled and before the liberators arrived because they had nothing to eat. But my mother-in-law was saved because she had those morsels of bread that she didn't eat on Pesach hidden in her hair. And that emunah that she had in Hashem, and that commitment, that ironclad commitment to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which is unimaginable in the camps. She had asked a rabbi, would have said, eat it. But she didn't, and that enabled her to survive. And to me, that's a powerful message of Mesiras Nefesh and of Yirat Shamayim. And it's a message to us, too, that despite all the difficulty, you know, we daven, we say Tehillim, we have Amunah, and that carries us forward, just like the bread and the hair of my mother-in-law carry her forward and enable her to live and then marry and have children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren. It was, and raise them. She raised them, you might say, in the schus of the bread that she didn't eat on Pesach. And that's morar. That's what the Reziner is saying. It's the power that we can endure despite Mariris. It's that hidden power that my mother-in-law expressed that all of us at some level or other, every one of us who's on this video conference, every one of us, we daven, we say Tehillim, we learn a little bit. What we're saying is, despite the mariris, I have a connection to Hashem. I don't understand everything, and it's a terrible, difficult time, but I daven. And that kesher endures like it enabled my mother-in-law to survive and to flourish and to have a wonderful family. At the yard site, two of her great-grandchildren made a siyum on a mesechta. Mesechta is called a kama. Who could have imagined that? It was the schus of that bread that she didn't eat in the camps during Pesach that enabled it to happen. And that's the shaloshinu l'shonam shmam. That's what the Radziner says endures and enable us to survive into the future and to flourish as Jews into the future. We evidence that ourselves, despite the maror, and that is the power of our connection to Hashem. And that's, Emirtz Hashem, what will carry us through this difficult time as we daven for a better future. You all know the Eish Kodesh. The Eish Kodesh was the great Rebbe, the Beit Tzetzen Rebbe in the Warsaw Ghetto. And he gave shmuzin, sichot, to his Hasidim during the Warsaw Ghetto. And this is what he spoke about on Pesach. He quoted the pasuk in Bamidbar. It says, V'yareo lanu ha-mitzrim v'la'avosenu. The Mitzrayim were evil to us and were harsh to us and to our fathers. Rashi there says in that pasuk, Mikan she-ha-avos mitzta'arim ba-keber. From here you see that the avos, Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, were pained in their grave over the Yoreu Lanu HaMitzrim, the trauma of centuries of slavery. The Piyas Tzetzener asked, shouldn't it say that the neshamos of the avos were in tsar? What do you mean in the kever? It's not bones. It's the neshama of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The nehelag and neshamas are close to Hashem in Shemayim. That's the tsar. That's what the Shlonim Rebbe asked in the depths of the Warsaw Ghetto. And his answer was very powerful, and I think we have to remember it. His answer was, you know, it's not just the neshamos of the avos who are pained at the physical suffering of Klal Yisrael. It's their very bones, those desiccated bones in the kever, just bones. Those bones themselves felt the pain of Klal Yisrael in Mitzrayim. It's not just their neshamas, that too, I'm sure. But the kever, they physically suffered with Klal Yisrael. And I would venture to say that our avos, not just Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, but all of our avos, my mother-in-law, all the great tzaddikim, wonderful people that we come from, they too are mitztayer bekever at the physical challenges that we now face, that so many Jews face during Pesach. I'd like to move into a related but different theme, and that is, what is the meaning of chayrus, of freedom, for us now? And how do we experience that? You know, everybody always asks the famous kasha on the Haggadah, or the difficulty of the Haggadah. Yeah. How are we supposed to experience Avdus Mitzrayim, the slavery in Mitzrayim? We're all free. We live in America. Nobody tells us what we have to do except, you know, follow the laws. We're free. We can be from Jews. Nobody's enslaving us. But the irony is that that question is inverted now, because we all are all incarcerated now. We're all locked in our homes. We don't do much in the way of shopping. Maybe we take a brief walk, but basically we're hibernating. We are no longer have the chayrus we had to go where we want, walk where we want, buy what we want, rent to do the Erev Pesach shopping. We don't have that anymore. And so the question to me is, how do we experience chayrus? freedom, not how can we experience slavery. And that triggers in me a set of reflections about Pesach. You know, we are incarcerated now, and over 3 days of Yontif, it's going to be hard. Many of us will be by ourselves. We might take a walk, but we're not going to shul. We're not on the telephone. We're not FaceTiming. We're not Zoom meetings. We have 3 days, three pretty long days. Days when we don't have the usual experience of chayrus, of going out to shul and of getting together with friends and family. And what should we be thinking about? How can we use that time well to experience what we need to experience on Pesach? And there are a lot of different ways of thinking about this. I'll share with you, I have a lot of thoughts about this, but it's getting, time is moving on. Let me share with you just really one crucial thought. What is chayrus, and how can we find chayrus when we are, so to speak, imprisoned in our houses with a lot of time to think? What should we be thinking about? So I am reminded of something Rav Kook says in his Parish on the Haggadah. And he struggles to define the meaning of chayrus, of freedom. And what he says is that, he doesn't put it in these terms, but I will make reference to a Jewish thinker in the mid-20th century, Isaiah Berlin, who distinguished between freedom to and freedom from. We can be free or not free from external constraints, like go outside, don't go out. Somebody could tell us what to do. If we are an employee, we have to listen to our boss. If we're married, we have to listen to our spouse, husband or wife. You know, we have responsibilities to listen to others in our lives. That's the way it should be. We have to listen to our parents. That's one kind of freedom. And it's not the case that that's the most important kind of freedom, being free from those external constraints. There's another kind of freedom, which he calls freedom too. And that is freedom to be the kind of person you want and most deeply are. Who are you? What makes you who you are? What are your defining characteristics? What are your crucial values? What are your special talents? What is it that you can contribute to the world, to Klal Yisrael, to your family? What makes you who you are? And freedom is being free to flourish as you uniquely can in a very complicated world. What makes you who you are? What are the midos that you feel define you? Your special qualities? What special talents do you have? What special interests do you have? What kinds of things do you like to do? How does your mind work? Every one of us is different. And Rav Kook says that true chayrus is having the capacity to realize that potential. And what enables us to realize that potential, paradoxically, are the mitzvahs. We tend to think, oh, the mitzvahs say, don't do this, don't do this, Pesach, don't eat chametz, eat matzah, tells us what to do. We're not free from the external constraints and obligations of the mitzvahs. We're not free from those. But they make us free to become the best possible person we can. Because by not eating chametz on Pesach, as my mother-in-law didn't eat chametz in the camps, by making it through the Seder during these difficult times, alone or with another person, but not with our friends and family, that's a challenge. But grappling with that challenge, with all the talent that we have and the special qualities that we have, before Pesach, during Pesach, that challenge will enable us to realize dimensions of our identity that may not have been fully realized, as was the case with my mother-in-law and the terrible straits she was in. And the constraints of Pesach, the absence of freedom from, makes freedom too possible. It will enable us to meet that challenge with whatever inner resources we have, and to take those resources that we take to be special and that are ours and devote those resources to making this the best possible Seder we can make, following the halachas and saying the Haggadah as challenging as it is. That means that we're taking the mitzvot and we're focusing them to enable us to bring out the best in ourselves during Pesach. And that is freedom too, to be the best we can be under the circumstances. And Torah and mitzvot, halacha, provide the focus, the context. We say the Haggadah, Manishtana, what does it mean? What do all these things mean to us now? You know, now it's quiet. We have a lot of time to think. How do we relate to Chacham, Rasha, Tamish, Engedei Elishol? How do we relate to the different aspects of the Haggadah? We can think about it because we have much more time. And that enables us to be free to become the best we can be because of these constraints, because of these limitations. Rav Kook goes on to say that it's not as simple as that. And he, by the way, here he draws from the thought of the Sfas Emes. This is just his way of putting it. But he says when we dig down deep to try to discover what makes us special, who we are, you know what we're going to discover? We're going to discover, he says, that those qualities are no more nor less than an expression of Hashem in our nation. Hashem is infinitely rich, infinitely capable. And every little talent we have, our midah for chesed, or for kindness, or for compassion, or gemilas chasadim, or our spirituality, or ability to analyze a gemara, or analyze a mishnah, or analyze a pasuk, or our ability to look at somebody and smile and make them feel good. Whatever those qualities we have, and everybody is different, each one is a refraction of one dimension of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And together, Klal Yisrael, Knesset Yisrael makes up the fullness of that rich expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, in order to be ourselves, we must be Yirei Shamayim, says Rav. Because Yirei Shamayim, fear of Hashem, enables us to see that what we are isn't me. It's the refraction of Hashem's light in me. This journey into ourselves is really a journey to Hashem. And what we further discover, Rav Kook says, is our link to all of Klal Yisrael. Because every single Jew has that same refraction of Hashem, but a different refraction. We all have that light from Hashem. We're all linked. Every single Jew is linked because down deep, we all have an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in our nations. So I encourage you during this Manishtana, this Seder that will, and Pesach that will be different than any other, we'll have some time to think because it'll be a lot quieter. I think Rav Kook would say that the Seder night is really the best time, Pesach, to think about Cheres, to think about who we are as human beings. Try to cultivate those talents, recognizing that whatever we are is no more than an expression of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which links us to all of Klal Yisrael. To me, that's personally an empowering idea. It enables us to use the quiet, to use the Seder and the Pesach to link up to Hashem, to link up to Klal Yisrael, and to enable ourselves with the focus of the Haggadah and the mitzvahs and chametz and matzah, enable us to take those upon ourselves and focus using them as tools to excavate deeply within ourselves, find our Kadosh Baruch Hu and our Neshama, and allow that to flourish. Usually Pesach is so busy. We don't have time for that. Our lives are so busy. But if that's the meaning of Cheres, Rav Kook says, then Pesach, this year, Manishtana, when it's going to be a lot quieter, a lot of time for introspection and reflection, inner spiritual growth, connection to Hashem, and understanding that. If you think about what Rav Kook is saying, it's empowering in a couple of ways to me personally. First of all, we're linked horizontally to Jews all across the globe. My father, Sheyichye, may he be well, always said at the Seder, always reminded us that It's amazing when you think about it that on the Seder night, Jews across the world, many not Orthodox, all in some their own way celebrating the Seder. It's an overpowering idea. Jews in Turkey and in India and in China, Chabad is there in China, and in New York and in Yerushalayim and in Brazil and wherever, Jews are all celebrating the Seder. You know, we're alone in our houses by ourselves, but we need to remember, as our book says, that our neshama is of peace, is one, unites. We're all united in HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and every Jew together with us. And many Jews are struggling across the world with the same epidemic. But nevertheless, we're all say Manishtana. We all say Avadim Ayinu. We'll all drink the four kosos. There will be a great, vast chorus of Jews across the world serving Hashem on Seder night in difficult circumstances. That's an empowering idea. It's not going to get us down. Jews around the world are going to do it. They're going to sing the Nagunim at the end of the Seder to the best of their ability. And we're all united all across the world. We're united, and even non-Orthodox Jews, keeping the Seder as best we can. That's a very, to me, a very empowering idea, and it emerges from what Rav Kook says. But it's not only a link horizontally across the world. We must remember, and this is so important now, these days, that there is a deep vertical link as well. We're not only linked to Jews across the world through the Seder night, first night of Pesach, everywhere around the world, celebrating Pesach despite difficult circumstances. We are linked vertically to Jews throughout history. You know, historically, Pesach has been a very difficult time. Blood libels, you know, that's what they accused us of, terrible anti-Semitism, pogroms. Unfortunately, Jews have suffered throughout the years, anti-Semitism, murder, plagues. But you know what? Throughout the years, Jews have kept the Seder. As my father told me just a couple of days ago, he said, 2,000 years we've celebrated the Seder. Amir Hashem will continue to celebrate the Seder tonight, this is at Pesach, and in the future. Because there is this incredible history of Jews coping with difficulty, even during a difficult Seder. And our legacy to the future, to those who follow us in that great chain of tradition will be, you know, we kept the Seder. It was so hard, Pesach. We were by ourselves. We didn't have our family with us, but we did it. And our great-great-grandchildren, or those of us who may not have children, but who have people they're friendly with, their children, then generations and generations will say, do you know what they did? During the epidemic, they couldn't shop. They had to get deliveries if they were lucky. They had difficulty kashering their kalim. They couldn't go to a regular tinus b'chorim. So many of our great-great-grandparents or friends, great-great going back, not great-great-grandparents, generations before, they'll say in the year 2150, they did it. We have to do the same thing. We are contributing to that chain, that Mesorah that extended through thousands of years, some are fabulously wonderful, and some very difficult. And we are making our contribution to that chain into the future. And what we succeed in doing now, I believe in my neshama, will empower the neshamos of future generations. Because just like we say Avram with the Akedah, that's a schus for us. Why? Why was Avram and the Akedah with Yitzchak a schus for us? Because look what Avram was able to do. And look what Yitzchak was able to do. It gets embedded in the epigenetics of the Jewish people. And what we succeed in doing this Pesach will become our contribution to the epigenetics, the DNA of the Jewish people, time immemorial, because these years, this year will not be readily forgotten. This will not be readily forgotten. This is a very difficult time for our country and for the whole world. Our contribution, like, of course, it's not the same thing as the Holocaust and like Auschwitz, but my mother-in-law's capacity to save that bread had an enduring contribution, not just to her life, but to the ruchnius, the commitment of her children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren. Because that's how she raised us, and that's how we raised our children. And those of us struggling through the current epidemic, what we can do, our commitment to the Seder, our commitment to the Haggadah, our commitment to Pesach, despite the circumstances, will have an impact on future generations. It will. Deeply in our neshamas and the neshamas of our successors will have an impact long into the future, because this will not be remembered. And when you look back from now, maybe live all of us healthy 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, we're going to remember this Pesach. And it's a test for us, like the Maror of Avdus. And we remember the Radzina Rebbe's teaching about that. Loshinu es Lashonam. We now have to stand to the best of our ability, and it's not easy, and we may falter. But if we can live through the Maror now, then that Maror then made Kabbalah Sotara possible decades, years later. And that's, I think, crucial to our contribution to the future of Klal Yisrael. I think in many ways, what's the message of Pesach? Hashem is Goel Yisrael. So we say in Tefillah, took us out of Mitzrayim, Kriyas Yamsuf, Kadosh Baruch takes care of us. Doesn't mean every person remains healthy or even every person survives, unfortunately. But our Kadosh Baruch was Goel Yisrael, not every Jew survived in Mitzrayim. But we survived Mitzrayim as a people, and we flourished. Hashem is Goel Yisrael. If that's the message of Pesach, that's the message that we need to hear right now. Hashem, Mirz Hashem, will be Goel us, and we will be strengthened by our capacity to cope with this challenge. And that, in turn, will strengthen the whole future of Klal Yisrael. That stands on our shoulders. Very first words of the Haggadah appear in Aramaic. Halach ma'anya, diachalo avasana, kol dichven yetze v'yechol, kol ditzrich yesi v'yifsach, we invite people into our Seder, whoever is needy, whoever is hungry, we invite people to come to our Seder. It's not happening this year. It's not happening this year. And I would say further, every single one of us is a ditzrich. Every single one of us needs support, needs friendship, needs care and concern. Every single Jew is a dichvin and a ditzrich. That's how we approach Seder. So we're not, you know, with a big feast, inviting poor people to our house. We are all dichvin and ditzrich. I'd like to make a suggestion to every one of you here listening to my drasha tonight. It's a practical suggestion. I sometimes make practical suggestions. And I'd like to make a very practical suggestion. You know, we can't have physical guests at the Seder, but we can have virtual guests at the Seder. Think about your Seder typically. You have guests sitting around the table, or family, or you're a guest. People share Divrei Torah. They share insights into the Haggadah. Oh, I saw this wonderful pshat. Or, oh, I have this question. Isn't that the way the Seder operates for all of us? Family members, friends, whether we're a guest, whether we're a host. They're Divrei Torah that illuminate the Seder. And every person brings his little Divrei Torah, what he liked, to the Seder. So here's my modest practical proposal. You know, back in, we had the Beis HaMikdash, Tzias Mitzrayim, there was something called a Chabura. Bnei Yisrael ate the Korban Pesach as a group, a Chabura. They ate it as a group. Well, I think we need to create virtual chaburos. And those virtual chaburos are chaburos of Torah. What I'd like to suggest is that team up with friend, two friends, three friends, write some Divrei Torah, or even Xerox them from a Haggadah, and email them to your chabura, to two friends, three friends, four friends, whatever it is, make a group of friends. You know your chevra. Each one of you share your Divrei Torah with the other. And so what happens is, you open up the Seder, and you say, Manish Tana. And then you look at your Divrei Torah from your virtual chabura, your Torah chabura. Oh, we got an email from Shmuel. And look what he said about Manish Tana. Let's read it and talk about it. Or let me think about it. And then we go to the Arba Banim. Oh, look what I got from Reuven. Look what he wrote about the Chacham. Let me read that at the Seder. And what we're doing is we're bringing in the interest, the presence, the Torah of our friends. It's not hard to do. You don't need to make up something new, although you can do that as well. You don't need to type up something new. You can just Xerox pages from a Haggadah that you like. But send it out to your friends so that there is a sharing, so that if you're by yourself or you're with another person or whatever, you will have friends. You need to share. It's got to be multiple, you know, two ways. You need to share that too. But I would encourage everybody to create a chabura of Torah, share Divrei Torah before Pesach. It doesn't have to take time. But organize it according to the Haggadah. You can even stick the pages into your Haggadah. You get to the Haggadah, oh, here's Shmuel. Oh, here's Leah. Oh, here's Rachel. And they become your partners. They become your friends at the Seder. And that, I think, is very, very important. I'd like to conclude with the very conclusion of the Haggadah. The Haggadah concludes with a very famous song, Chad Gadya, Chad Gadya. We all know it. We're tired at the end of the Seder, but we all know the story, the song. Abba buys a little goat for two zuzim. Goat gets eaten by a cat. Cat gets eaten by a dog. The stick kills the dog. Fire burns the stick. The water puts out the fire. The ox drinks the water. The shochet slaughters the cow. The Malach HaMavis slaughters the shochet. And then HaKadosh Baruch Hu slaughters the Malach HaMavis. To me, that little conclusion to the Haggadah speaks eloquently how I feel, and I imagine many of us feel right now. There are a lot of Gideon, a lot of kid goats, people, innocents, who are suffering. Some people don't survive. Baruch Hashem, the vast, vast, vast majority of people survive. Some mild symptoms, some more difficult symptoms. We always must remember that the vast, vast, vast majority of people survive, but there are kabanos. And there is suffering. We know that. And there's a goat. A little goat, innocent goat, gets eaten by the cat. And there's a chain of death. But how does it end? Asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes. The time comes when Hashem says, as they say in Yiddish, Genug Shein. It's enough. Maspik. Maspikli. All this death. Maspikli. This little song tells us that at the end, when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides it, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who brought the cat that ate the Gedi, and so on, that very HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Malach HaMavis, that's it. You're finished. Out of business. That's it. That's how the Haggadah ends. The Haggadah ends with a deep, powerful, eloquent affirmation that HaKadosh Baruch Hu masters the Malach HaMavis. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decide when he will slaughter that Malach HaMavis. When the difficulty and the illness will end. And our tefillah is that the Malach HaMavis come and go. The Kadosh Baruch Hu come immediately, as soon as possible, to get rid of them all from us. But this little song tells us that it will happen. We know it will happen. Kadosh Baruch Hu can kill the Malach HaMavis when he wants. And the Haggadah ends on that most powerful note. The Malach HaMavis will die. And that's what we need to hear. That's what I need to hear. And those are the last resonant, eloquent words of the Haggadah. Kadosh Baruch Hu will slaughter the Malach HaMavis. May HaKadosh Baruch Hu do so soon. May he bring us a Chag Sameach. May we, our avoda, as I've been saying, is to struggle with that simcha, experience that simcha, find Hashem within us, feel united to Klal Yisrael, remember the past, future, and be free with the Seder and with the Haggadah to be the best possible person I can be as a refraction of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's R. May that R come. May we experience Pesach, the joy and health that we all want. May suffering end, and may Simcha fill our lives as the end of the Haggadah says. Well, good Shabbos, healthy Shabbos, a restful Shabbos as we all prepare for Pesach. I look forward to seeing you all again in Meretz Hashem virtually on Monday night as we continue learning and maybe even try to finish, if possible, maybe not. And we're learning together. We will now daven Ma'ariv and say two Pirkei Tehillim as we usually do on Thursday nights. I'll ask Saul to lead us in Ma'ariv. And I actually remembered, I asked Saul to remind us, but I even remembered Kiddush Levana. Remember Kiddush Levana? You know, we Jews.
We do yesterday.
I don't know if the Levana is out tonight. I think it might be. Make sure you do it. And we Jews are like the
Levana. Yes, you have it.
You know, we eclipse sometimes, but we always grow. That's Klal Yisrael's history. And now we dive into Hashem that we are on the waning. We are on the waxing side. It's been a lot of waning. Now we're on the one. The growth of the moon, the light of the moon. So Chag Sameach to, well, I'll see hopefully you Monday night, but in any case, have a wonderful Shabbos. Saul, please lead us in Ma'ariv, and then Mark Kimmel-Levitz, if he's okay, there. Mark, you there? Arvi. Lead us in Tehillim.